I've started the recording. I'll be starting the meeting in about 2 minutes. I think it's time to start the meeting. I think people will keep trickling in, but let's get a move on here. The first thing I want to say is we are operating under the Hyperledger umbrella. So we have to go by the Hyperledger antitrust policy. In case you're interested, it is available online and linked to probably from the meeting minutes, meeting notes, or from the main page of Identity Working Group. As you can hear, I am in New York City. You hear the sirens. So the antitrust policy is one of the two things that we have to obey or go by. The other thing is the code of conduct, which is basically we have to be kind to one another, and even when we are disagreeing with people, we have to do it in a respectful manner, because often we are only connecting using this, using Zoom or something else. So we have to be very conscious of other people's time and their emotions. Thank you. And I also thank Ori Steele from Transmute. He's going to present on his proposal for a universal wallet. I'm very interested in this topic for many reasons, and I believe it's appropriate for the Identity Working Group to take a look at this, because it unites many of the streams that we have been interested in since Hyperledger was established. And I also know that there's a lot of work going on in other parallel streams. TOIP is one of the more prominent ones. There is the Verifiable Credentials group, community group in W3C. There is the DIF. There is the DID working group. There are many such efforts. And it is our duty to absorb learnings from all of these different expert groups and to bring it into the context of Hyperledger and DLTs in particular. So without much more, let's have Ori talk about his proposal for universal wallets.
Awesome. Thank you. Hello, everyone. I recognize some of you. Others, I don't think I've met in person before. So I'm going to do a quick introduction, and then I'm going to do some screen sharing, drive you around the specification proposal as it is today, give you some brief sort of demos of some of the related concepts that aren't core to the specification, and then basically give you all the ability to follow up asynchronously, you know, and track the work as it proceeds and contribute to it. And obviously lots of questions at the end. So I'll try and get to the questions because that's where all the fun stuff is. So I'm Ori Steele. I'm CTO and co-founder of Transmute. We're an Austin, Texas-based company that started in blockchain and have refined to focus specifically on decentralized identity and verifiable credentials for trusted supply chain. So that's the primary area that we work on. But because of our start, in Ethereum, we've always been mindful of the relationship between blockchains, public ledgers, cryptocurrency, and this, existing, all of these communities that you just mentioned. So I should mention, I am a co-editor of the Sidetree protocol with Daniel Buchner from Microsoft, which is a specification for scalable decentralized identity methods at Decentralized Identity Foundation. I'm co-editor with Manu Sporny on the DIDSpec registries, which is the thing that we use to try and ensure interoperability among DID methods in the DID working group. And I use the verifiable credentials specification all the time. So that's kind of the background. I'm probably more active in DIF and the W3C CCG than in Hyperledger, but I occasionally pop into Hyperledger groups to try and keep everybody in sync. Cool. So with that, I'm going to start sharing my screen, and I'm going to walk you guys through the proposal. So I will provide links to all of the repos that you're going to see here. They're all public. All licensed under either the W3C document license policy or Apache 2. This proposal is for a universal wallet, and it's an editor's draft. And right now it is under a Transmute GitHub repo, but we proposed a little while ago on the W3C CCG mailing list to move it as a work item to the W3C CCG. And essentially what this wallet proposal is it's, we at Transmute, because we work with, public ledgers and decentralized identifiers, we're always having to manage the concept of cryptocurrency along with identity and credentials. And a thing that we've noticed and was highlighted by some of the glossary work, which I believe Drummond was involved in as well, was that when we think about what wallet means very different things to different communities. And recent work has shown that many people think wallet is just about storing currency or credentials or tokens or identity documents, but not all of those things. And so what this proposal is doing is basically trying to create a unified vocabulary, not reinventing the wheel, pointing to the normative definitions for what a decentralized identity is, what a decentralized identity document is, what a verifiable credential is, how does it look, pointing to those specifications, but describing that these are things that people store in a wallet and they are a known data model. And there's a set of interfaces. So on the left-hand side here, you can see data model items and you can see interfaces. And the point of these two sections is one, to just take inventory of things that people are storing in wallets and provide all of them in one place. We know that the specific representations we have of them right now are not perfect. Like, for example, Hyperledger connections. This is my attempt to take a Hyperledger connection thing that I have seen and externalize it in a way that we can gather feedback on it. But I expect that this probably won't remain like this forever. Like it'll change significantly. But the point is basically that when you have data model and you have interface descriptions, you can have a set of vocabulary definitions around how the data model items are related to the interfaces. So for example, issuing, the issuing interface is basically a way of, maybe it's better to find the definition up here. So when we look at the terminology section, these terms are for the most part pointing to normative definitions of other specifications. And in some cases, we're trying to basically just provide a human friendly version of a digital concept for the physical wallet, you know, concepts that exist. And we're trying to describe relationships between these terms in a way that kind of unifies the DID spec, the verifiable credential spec, and other specifications that are out there today. So not, again, not reinventing any of those terminologies, just describing how they're related. So the simple example is when you're issuing a verifiable credential, you have a key. You're going to use that key to sign a some credential payload, and you're going to get a verifiable credential out of that. When you're transferring cryptocurrency, you're going to have some sender and recipient information, and you're going to be transferring cryptocurrency. Sorry, one sec. My cat is attacking something. Rather embarrassing. Just give me one moment. Get down. Ah. Sorry.
There's a permanent exemption during COVID. There's a permanent exemption for cat problems. Don't worry about it.
He loves to scratch on the blinds when I'm on conference calls. And I unfortunately can't mute myself when I'm presenting. So apologies. So what I was saying is that transferring of cryptocurrency is also a function of using keys on sender and recipient information. It generates a signed blockchain transaction, which when shared with a network results in the transfer. So by having the concept of key be used both to describe transferring of cryptocurrency and of issuing credentials, we can start to see why having wallet terminology that accounts for both of these things in one place is sort of valuable. So backing up for a second, at the very top of the specification, there's some notes which I wanna really draw everyone's attention to because they're really important. This specification is about describing data model that already exists and data structures that already exist and interfaces that already exist. It's just about kind of documenting what people have been doing in the space in a way that puts all of them on the same board so that we can see what's the same and what's different. And just to be very, very clear about this, this is not a telling people how to go build their wallet thing. This is a way of describing that if your wallet stores data structures that look like this, you actually have interoperability according to the specification out of the box. So, you know, for example, the Indie ecosystem has Indie Wallet. There's data structures for storing the actual wallet contents. And it's my understanding this is completely compatible with that entire structure because how you actually store these data models, you know, in your wallet is that's outside of the specification. Like this specification is about an abstract data model and a set of abstract interfaces. There is a sample implementation that we've provided as a way of kind of demonstrating that it's functional and works, but that's just one sample implementation. And we, you know, expect that existing wallet systems are not going to write significant amounts of code to try and get interoperability with these things. One place where we do expect people might write some code is export and import interface. So the export interface basically says, I have a wallet, I have some content, and I want to export that content according to the specification so that it can be imported by another wallet that conforms to the specification. This gives you wallet portability. So important things to note about exporting is you can't export hardware isolated keys, but you can export metadata related to them. So that's that's a good thing. You want to be able to do that, but just be aware that like you can't actually export private key material if it's hardware bound. And in best case scenario, it is hardware bound. There are keys that do exist in plain text form that are extractable, and those keys can be exported or not exported depending on your, you know, how you want to implement export according to this specification in your wallet system. So just because this is, because we're talking about private key material, best case, you know, best practices for that is definitely generate it on the device you're planning to use it from. Never move it from there ever. And if you're going to export any part of it, only export the public key components of it, never export private keys. However, there are scenarios where you move private key material around, or in particular with mnemonics in the cryptocurrency world, it's actually fairly common to enter a mnemonic, which generates a seed, which then generates an infinite set of public private key pairs. So exporting that is really exporting an unknown set of private keys. So it's big, that's a big export. And that's very common in the cryptocurrency ecosystem, and we need to support it. But at the same time, we need to sort of like make people aware it, generally speaking, you want to be careful moving private keys or material used to generate private keys. So I think the one other section I want to comment on is this integration section here. We're trying to describe systems that exist today and how the specification relates to them. So part of this is sort of just doing a survey of what's working today and putting it all on the board. So HD wallets are those cryptocurrency wallets that I mentioned. And you can model an HD wallet with some metadata, which is the HD path and derivation scheme like BIP32 or BIP39, forgetting which BIP at this point, and the secret material. And that will generate, that will give you the ability to discover tokens. So if you move, if you have cryptocurrency wallet one and you move to cryptocurrency wallet two, you enter your mnemonic, you enter this HD path thing, or the wallet just applies it automatically because it's a wallet that's specific to Ethereum, for example. And that is enough for that wallet system to discover all of the tokens associated with those accounts. So that's kind of how HD wallets work. OpenPGP key rings are a thing that people use for software supply chain. So there's a relationship to importing and exporting keys that are in your PGP key ring on your device. If it's a, you know, a mobile application or a desktop computer, those are places that keys are stored. And you may want to link them or not link them, but we have to be aware of them from the specification side. And then there's obviously like Android Keychain and Apple Wallet and, you know, the Secure Enclave and various other mobile wallets, some of which are focused more on digital forms of cash or credit and payments, and not really on credentials and identity documents. The goal here is basically to describe how those systems fit into this concept of a digital wallet. Just for, you know, first describing how they are and what they're doing and how it's related to the specification. And then maybe in the future, figuring out how to abstract the interfaces that they are supporting in a way that you can have portability across interfaces. So when you move from wallet A to wallet B, you should be able to tell whether you're going to be able to transfer cryptocurrency after that or not. And that's the kind of thing that you can only do if wallet A and wallet B expose that they support a set of standard interfaces, and you can check that. So the other thing is, you know, we've built a set of open source material UI components for these things. I sure hope this doesn't break while I'm screen sharing, but, you know, essentially we have different representations of these wallet data model objects, like, you know, entropy and that kind of thing. And, you know, you can see they're all represented as JSON, you know, underneath the hood. And, you know, an important, you know, factor of this is obviously support for decentralized identifiers. So we've done some, you know, this is user experience work, which is applied to the sample implementation, which in turn conforms to the specification. So what I'm showing you here is really just like stuff that Transmute has done and open sourced that we use that's built on top of this already. That's like anybody can go use it if they think that it's valuable. But just to be super clear, like this data model is the thing that powers the ability to have these user experiences, and the data model is what's described in the specification. So I think with that, that's kind of a summary of where the wallet proposal is today. We're still waiting for co-sponsors in the W3C CCG. I've talked to a couple companies in the Hyperledger community that are interested in being co-sponsors of the work there. I don't know if anyone from SICPA is on the call, but if you are, I'd love to chat with you about basically, like, I'd love to hear your guys' perspective on this stuff, because I know we've had some interesting conversations and they're doing some really awesome work on in the space as well. So I'll stop there and I'll stop screen sharing, and we can take any questions from the group.
Don't be shy. Jim, I know you are there.
Yeah, I'm just hiding here. It's okay. Yeah, no, I think the idea of a universal wallet's good. I think the fact that a couple of things, your data model is important. There's, in my world, if you want to have what I call more flexible applications, you want a flexible data model. And what you've done, I think, well, is provided what I call a core data model for what a wallet would have at a minimum. But what's nice about it is I could easily see extending it, in my case, to add extra attributes that might be specific to a use case. The other thing that's important is the interfaces. So I like what you're doing. I can't use it right away. I've got other things on my plate, but it definitely looks like it's worth moving forward with. And I really want to see, the other thing I would say that you've done really well is use the existing specifications that are already out there rather than trying to rewrite or reinvent your own, which is critical. Last point is I certainly want to track this because I think I would like to see it become a W3C standard, which would be pretty cool, and like to see it, you know, in a sense, get improved and adopted, which would be great. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Do you want me to manage the queue? I see Daniel from Accenture has his hand raised.
Yeah, yes, thanks. So similar. And maybe I'm less familiar with this and some, but I'm intrigued by your entropy example. And I couldn't, it was up on the screen real briefly, and I was wondering if you could dive into that a little bit more. What would be an example of that, perhaps?
Sure. So it's fairly common with anything cryptography related that you want deterministic derivation. And there's a common pattern where you start your cryptographic process by gathering from a source of true entropy. And you know, it has to be, you want entropy and you want to gather that from a source of true randomness. So if you've seen the Cloudflare lava lamps, you know, thing, or you've heard about listening for, you know, radioactive particle decay, those are ways of gathering randomness that are safe or safer than gathering randomness from, like, you know, your local system clock and some set of process trees, which an attacker can manipulate. If you have a source of randomness that you've gathered data from and you've got, you know, 32 bytes of entropy, that material can then be used to derive other things. So you can use it to derive keys directly, or in the case of HD wallets, you can use it to derive an infinite set of keys from one source of entropy. So the idea, and another thing that you can do with entropy is you can use a password derivation function to convert a password to entropy, and then you can use that entropy to generate keys. And that sort of, that basically lets you enter a password, and as long as the password doesn't change and nobody knows the password, you're going to be able to get to those sets of keys. Now, it's problematic because if that password gets discovered, those keys are just totally destroyed. So entropy is a thing that's used in wallet systems, but you have to use it carefully. And I think the way that we've created a bunch of user experience demos around this that are probably a little bit riskier in terms of how they manage entropy, but they do that specifically to support user experience, like, issues today. So that's kind of a brief summary of.
That helps. Thanks. And, you know, I come from the biometrics world, and you know, entropy and like fingerprint are, you know, typically minutia points, and you know, if you have one fingerprint versus 10 fingerprints versus space, you know, you're dealing with different entropy, and then I guess I had that stuck in my mind, so I was just so. But you explained it well. You cleared it up. What it means in this context. Yeah. Thanks.
When you say entropy related to user experience, what exactly is meant by that?
So let's. I guess I can just show you. You all see my screen again?
Yes.
I think I closed the link. Okay. So I'm not sure if this is going to work. I haven't tested this in a little while, but let's say that you've hit a progressive web application, and there is no wallet material. There's nothing. You've never had an account before, ever. One way of establishing an identity is by first getting some kind of entropy into the system to use for key derivation, and then use those keys as identity mechanisms. So public key-based identity systems is something that I spend a lot of time with, and I need a public key in order to kind of get into that system. So what I'm trying to do is get to a public key as quickly as possible. So one way of doing that is to use a key derivation function from a password, which if you've heard about, like, you know, rainbow tables and things like that, basically you want a slow hash-based system for getting some form of key material that's derived from something that a human might use, like a password. So here's a really terrible password, 123. And I'm going to generate this. And what I've done behind the scenes is I've input 123, the string, into the key derivation function, which has generated a set of entropy. Like, well, it's not really entropy anymore because you know exactly how to get to it, right? But this value right here can be used to generate keys. And so what it actually has in this case, that single password can become a single decentralized identifier, which is this did key method, which is just a simple way of representing key material. And so that password became these three items in the wallet. And that's an example of the kind of user experience thing that I'm talking about. This is totally not safe to do by itself. Like, you would not want to build an entire system around this. But for the sake of explaining a wallet concept, it's very handy because I can say, well, you just need to remember 123, and you can always get back to this entropy source, which is used to derive things, and these specific keys, which are used to authenticate the identity behind password 123.
Great. Thanks for that. I actually was involved in a project where I, you know, in the 90s, created a random source of random seed using localized methods. Anyway, I won't go into the details of that, but I'm quite familiar with this. But, you know, obviously giving people tools like that, 123, can be good for when you're doing simple things, but sometimes you have to prevent people from being vulnerable.
Yeah. So you can combine that password with other factors, or you can use that password in a more complicated process to get to those seed material. And by adding complexity to that system, you can start to get more reusability traits and other things like that. There's also, you know, Shamir secret sharing and those other mechanisms for splitting up the inputs to systems that derive, you know, some seed, which that's entropy is really just the seed material that's used to derive other things. So it's very important that seed material remains secret, and you have to be very careful about how you generate it. But all of that is really just, that's a thing that you see that shows up in cryptocurrencies, and I've now shown how it shows up in decentralized identifiers, and verifiable credentials come from those decentralized identifiers and the associated key material. So it's just a Entropy is just one of those data models that wallets should be aware of, in my opinion. And it's particularly handy when you're creating demonstrations.
Great. Now, anybody else has questions? Please do not hesitate. We have half an hour left. We don't have any other major, presentation. I mean, anything else happening?
So, Ori, this is, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Drummond. I was going to say, this is on track to become a work item at the CCG, the W3CCG, is that right?
Yep. Yeah. So I proposed it as a CCG work item. And the reason for that was basically the verifiable credentials data model. I've imported all of those data model objects without modification. So I'm just assuming that that data model exists. And similarly for DIDs and the DID data model. So another thing that we see in wallets very frequently is caching of identity material related to connections that you've had. So that's not just Hyperledger connections, that's also regular DID documents. A concrete example is if you're using the Universal Resolver to get to various different DID decentralized identity documents, which contain key material, you might want to keep cached versions of those documents in your wallet so that if you're in an internet denied environment, you can use those cached versions. Or similarly for Hyperledger Indie credentials, Indie schemas, you might not be able to get to the blockchain to go get to that schema definition. So you might want to cache that schema definition in the wallet so you can verify a credential by being next to the other party, right? So in an internet denied environment, you start to want to store these data models that have been described by W3C specifications. And that's the main reason that I chose to suggest as a work item in the CCG.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So. But what do you, I'm curious as to your thoughts as to the progression. Would you see it graduating to a W3C working group, IETF working group? Where are you thinking this might go? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I honestly don't really know. It depends on the buy-in and the communities that are doing the work. So the other thing that I've tried to do is I reached out to people in DIF. I've attended the Hyperledger Aries call. I presented this on the Aries call a little while ago. I'm trying my best to get all of the stakeholders that I'm aware of into the conversation. And obviously, if it's a specification, it needs to be done in a place that has, you know, IPR protection and all of that stuff that you're all super familiar with, and that is probably our least favorite part of doing this kind of work. So it needs to be some place that can be moved to a W3C working group or an IETF working group, just based on the experience that I have, you know, focusing mostly on the DID working group and verifiable credentials work. It feels to me like the kind of thing that the W3C might do a good job of managing, particularly the concept of, you know, a wallet interface manifest. You think about what progressive web applications are exposing today, they're exposing information that feels a lot like interface material or a description of, you know, capabilities of this progressive web app. And I could see strong alignment between the way that this is described and that kind of thing in the future. But if we saw like there was massive contribution from people coming mostly from IETF, and there's a strong desire to see it existing in IETF, I don't have a strong opinion about which standards organization should ultimately hold a specification that comes from this. This is currently a community group work item because we're trying to gather support and interest and see, you know, like basically how we want to be careful not to just like commit to a new working group without an understanding of how rough the seas are in this space.
Yeah, no question. That's why I was, one of the reasons I was asking. So thanks.
So there's a question in chat from Peter from eDelivery. Can you elaborate more about OpenPGP keys? So OpenPGP and GPG are really popular public key infrastructure, especially in the software supply chain space. So if you've gotten a Tor browser bundle, you've probably been warned to check the signature on it. I don't know if you've actually done that, but if you did, you would be using GPG. And it's fairly common to see binaries being signed with GPG keys. GPG and SSH are the two primary public key infrastructure components in GitHub and Git generally. So I love GPG, and I've spent a lot of time trying to make GPG and OpenPGP work with decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials. And so I put that piece in the spec specifically to reserve space for legacy public key infrastructure like GPG, because it's not going to go away as a core component of software supply chain and, you know, confidence in authenticated binaries and that kind of thing. And, you know, it's still supported by GitHub. Many of us use built-in GPG support, like as part of our regular Git process. So that's the main reason that it's in there. So Anshu asks, regarding co-sponsorship, what type of contribution were you intending? This is more from the point of view of understanding how Hyperledger open source universe comes together in supporting such a project. Yeah, so there's kind of three levels to it. There's the specification, which needs to be developed, and that's just that's HTML file that describes a set of behaviors and interfaces and data models, right? It's got normative definitions and non-normative definitions, and it's a spec. Contribution to that, in my opinion, if it's adopted as a CCG item, contribution to that looks like opening pull requests to change HTML definitions. And anybody can do that who signs the CCG contributor agreement, sort of similar to contributor licensing agreements elsewhere, but I don't want to get into the details of that. But basically, you can contribute to the spec by editing an HTML file. And obviously, like, people will review those changes and argue with you about whether it's helpful or not. And you know, that's how progress is made. There is a sample implementation, which we have, which I initially proposed as a thing that maybe you should go to Diff, because Diff it likes to hold software. But based on the conversations that I've had with them, it's now seeming like, I don't know really where that sample implementation is. There was a bunch of debate on the CCG mailing list about the helpfulness of sample implementations or whether they harm specifications when there's software that comes along with them. As a developer, I find that position to just be crazy. I love to have software that goes along with the specification because it makes it easier to understand and test the specification. If you need at least something to be able to test the specification, but we're still sorting that out. So contribution to the reference implementation looks like pull requests against code that are supposed to reflect the specification, and similar like kinds of contribution apply to that. Like, it's the code is licensed under some open source software license. It exists in some GitHub organization. You open pull requests against it, and changes to the code happen. And ideally, the code continues to follow the specification, not like lead the specification, right? That's the thing we don't want. And then the other final part is UI components or other software packages that basically look at the specification or its data models and provide functionality that assumes those data models exist. So in the case of DID documents or DIDs, those are software components that you probably may even have today in your existing wallet ecosystem. And you could choose to use our material UI components to represent those DIDs and DID documents, or you can use your own. And certainly pull requests and cross-linking at that layer would be helpful. I think it's helpful for developers to know, I'm trying to represent a DID. Where's all of the different ways that I might go ahead and handle that? That is kind of outside the specification itself, but obviously the UI library that I shared has some opinions about that, and we're open to contribution on that UI library and open to cross-linking to your UI libraries that represent DIDs or verifiable credentials. So Peter asks, we can then use HSM modules and Trezor wallets for storing keys. Yeah, so the specification does describe two kinds of remote key. One is a remote like service-backed key. So that's things like Amazon key management service, Google key management service, Azure Key Vault. Those are software interfaces to keys, in some case, hardware-isolated keys. And then there's things like MetaMask, which you can use Trezor to get the address, associated with the keys that are hardware backed. And the spec describes both of those use cases. So both the hardware isolated device keys and hardware isolated service keys that you're sort of more familiar with KMS systems. And it, just to be super clear about that, there are other standards that are dedicated to remote key management software. And for the most part, we're trying to just try and figure out how do they represent identifiers for those keys, and can we just use those identifiers in the specification? Roland asks, do you consider your current entropy model is low entropy one? Is it open to more complex implementations? So the current demo it's a demo. So like, don't go using that in production. Hopefully that's been communicated clearly at this point, but just using a password with a salt into a key derivation function and then using those keys as permanent keys is a recipe for being really unhappy in the future. It is really, really simple to quickly build UI when you take that approach and quickly get deterministic key generation. It's helpful for development. It's helpful for specification, exploration. But really what you want with, any source of randomness is you want to have really high confidence that the randomness is truly random and that some adversary hasn't inserted some process into how that randomness is interpreted that is dangerous. And there's the dual ECDR PRNG, issue. Like, we've had issues with this before, both at the chip manufacturer level in terms of chip manufacturers being bad, or at the standards level in terms of like standards organizations being manipulated by adversaries that specifically desire for randomness to be deterministic, because that's how you break cryptography. So you have to be very careful about all of that. And from the wallet specs perspective, we're just describing that is a thing. We're not telling you how to get safe entropy. We're just saying, assuming you had it, you could use it.
Yes, indeed. Now, I want to challenge the concept of universal wallet and stretch it a little further. One of the things that has cropped up recently is the CBDCs, central bank digital currencies. And obviously, any operation with such a system would require some form of a wallet. Either an organizational wallet in the case of a wholesale CBDC, or in the case of a retail CBDC, an interaction between a enterprise wallet and a personal wallet. Then, of course, adding to that would be all of the other, functions that you have described there, to hold credentials, to do other things. Same thing in terms of the enterprise wallet, because there too, there are, multiple signers, sometimes NPCs involved, all of that stuff. But what do you think of, for example, the Fed has said that they want to be in charge of the infrastructure for a retail CBDC, which implies, in my mind anyway, that they will get involved in the construction of a part of that wallet, because the integrity of the currency, the CBDC, will depend partly on the strength of the wallet. So either they will get directly involved, or they will do some kind of certification of that wallet. But in any case, so if they get involved, what do you think is going to happen to the concept of a universal wallet?
That's a great question, and it's fairly complex. I think the starting point would be by analogy to look at the mobile driver's license, you know, initiatives and the relationship between that standardization process and the major hardware providers for mobile devices. So major, you know, the top, you know, two or three major hardware device manufacturers are all going to have their own version of secure enclave technology. And they're, in the case of mobile driver's license, the intention has been to kind of bind, and I'm not an expert on that specification, so forgive me if I say anything that's wrong. My understanding is that there is a binding to keys that exist on the device, and that if I hit your phone with a hammer, you're going to have to go back to the DMV with a new phone to get a new driver's license. Now, that process creates a powerful relationship between the hardware manufacturer and the issuer of those credentials. Essentially, it's like the issuer of the credentials has picked hardware manufacturers that support those interfaces to support credential issuance. I expect a similar thing to happen for any kind of digital currency at the nation state level, just because of the similarities in terms of kind of what they're doing. So I'm hypothesizing right now. I have no knowledge of whether that will or will not be the case. But I think the key point there is that, like, the thing that any party will want is they'll want the keys that are controlling the currency to be in some kind of hardware system, and that because of that, there will be a relationship between the issuer of currency versus the issuer of credentials and the hardware manufacturers, right? Because if you're issuing currency that can only be moved by ED25519, then that has to be supported in the secure enclave. Or if it's going to be moved only by SEC P256K1, that needs to be supported in the secure enclave. And secure enclave crypto implementations are a there's a relationship between supported hardware isolated crypto and the kinds of systems that a big centralized consortium authority will invest in. And this is a main reason why a lot of the NIST curves are continued to be required and supported, because many hardware systems or isolated software isolated systems only support, you know, the NIST curves, and they don't support ED25519 or SEC P256K1. So even if you wanted to move your Bitcoin or your Ethereum with that hardware isolated key system, you actually can't get signatures or keys from that secure enclave that support that crypto. So I expect that as digital central backed based, you know, digital currency, central bank backed digital currencies, you know, emerge, if they do emerge, there's going to be a question over, like, how are those currencies represented? Are they credentials that are moving around, or are they, like, you know, a distributed ledger technology like Bitcoin? I imagine they're more like Bitcoin, and I imagine that the signature algorithm is not the same as SEC P256K1, just based on politics.
Well, sure. I mean, DCEP, which is a Chinese currency, will probably support Chinese crypto. But, you know, there is a very significant difference between a credential issued to you in particular, like a driver's license, and a spendable currency that is frictionlessly traveling between people in a peer-to-peer manner, which is what, you know, a lot of people want, but with occasional forays into, let's say, a decentralized system to record the transfer or not. I mean, you know, a pure token-based system, which is like cash, doesn't really exist because of various limitations. But the whole point is, there can be a situation in which, for example, you have no internet connectivity, and that you're using, let's say, a debit card, smart card. Even there, that that can function as a wallet, because there are some functions that are available, cryptographic functions available on smart cards. And I wonder whether your concept of a hardware, of a universal wallet, would go to towards that also.
So we do have a demo, which I probably shouldn't be talking about, because there's a blog post about it that's coming out. But I think, you know, some of you are probably familiar with the company Tangem, and they're a manufacturer of smart cards, NFC-based smart cards that support ED25519 and SAT-P26K1. And you can actually move their product. They have a Android application and a product that's about cryptocurrency transfer using those cards. And it's really awesome because the form factor of them feels like a lot nicer than working with Trezors and Ledgers, which I have used, you know, a lot, and which I don't find to be particularly comfortable to use. So it's completely, and that kind of like contactless payment system that you may be seeing, you know, with Apple Pay or, you know, other NFC-based payment systems, I think is in the minds of people in terms of an experience that's coming. So I think there's 100% the capacity to support those kinds of things in the future. And part of what allows us to support them is keeping the data model abstract and just basically writing translations between, you know, Apple Pay or Google Pay, or, you know, Tangem, like, you know, currency transfers, which is really just Ethereum or Bitcoin currency transfers. All we have to do is describe an existing process.
Here are some matching videos.
That's what happens when you talk to Google. there's a question in chat that's sort of related, which is, you know, have you, it seems like this is a good idea. Have you heard any opposition from commercial entities or governments? There's some support from, there's some support from Anil John from the Department of Homeland Security, Silicon Valley Innovation Program in the CCG mailing list. He talks about some of the related issues that they have had on the subject. I work with obviously Microsoft like almost every day on the Sidetree protocol, and I know that there's interest within like the DIF, which includes, you know, Consensus and Microsoft and a bunch of other companies, on implementing something like this. I think there's a little bit of the sort of politics of like, do DIF members contribute to things in the CCG? We recently just got the Secure Data Store working group in DIF, where CCG came to DIF to contribute. So my hope was that maybe we would see something the other direction on this. But still sort of waiting to hear from Microsoft whether this is actually a thing that they intend to support or whether they're going to go to war against it. I mean, they kind of can't go to war against it because it supports all of the same cryptography that they're working on. So it models their system as it exists today and would always support JWT-based verifiable credentials, for example. Like, it supports those. So we'll see. I don't have good contact with anyone at Apple or Google or Samsung, so I wouldn't know, but hopefully by putting it into standards organizations where we might have some visibility into those companies, they can come to the table early and object early, and we can hear their concerns and we can figure out how to address them if they do have any. My intention is to support all of the major players in the space and describe effectively what they're doing in a common vocabulary so that the user experience around digital wallets improves, because it's not just like, oh, digital wallet just means this one thing, and when I go to a different digital wallet, it means something totally different. My hope is that those bigger guys can help drive standardization around what is a digital wallet and what aspects of it are repeatable, and what features of digital wallets can consumers come to rely on in a standard interface, kind of like the standard interfaces that we have around phone numbers being, you know, a common thing that all of these guys work with. But that's the dream, and, you know, we'll see if we get any of them.
What about the Federal Reserve Bank? Have you ever talked to anybody there? Because they seem to have a working group, or at least people talking about the CBDC. And I think the wallet concept is missing from their thoughts, mainly because they are more concerned about the monetary policy and other things. But in the end, to make it reality, they have to come up with some standards, or at least to work with some NIST standards or some other place, the standards originating somewhere else. So, yeah. But I think it is behooves us to get involved with them somehow.
Absolutely. So, you know, finance and banking operations are not our strong suit. And we're looking for people who are interested in standardizing wallets that focus on those areas to contribute to the specification and make sure that it works for them.
I would definitely be interested in being a bridge to them, because we have in the capital markets SIG, we have a project called eTyler, which is about central bank digital currency in Hyperledger. And we have created a working model of a wholesale CBDC, and we have presented it to some central banks.
That's awesome.
They seem very interested in it, because this is working software. They're hearing all this theory. It doesn't, like, you know, you just talked about it before, about developer involvement in standards. How do you create an experimental version of software so that you can actually work out some of the complexities of the standards? Anyway, I see that Dan has got his unmute on, so he probably is going to say something about it.
I put in there because the conversation was going around standards and wallets and stuff, and Apple recently, you know, filed a patent related to verified claims of user identity, and I assume they're trying to tweak their wallet to afford, and it's very device specific, and I was just wondering if Ollie had any, or anybody on the call for that matter, had, any insights or opinions on what Apple's doing in this space in terms of probably not a universal wallet, but certainly an Apple wallet used for verified claims of user identity. But maybe not. Maybe it's too new.
So there's a question from Peter from eDelivery. We're EU-based. We have initiatives, projects like ESIF and EBSI. We'll be in very near future possibility to contact work together. The links that I've put into the chat are stable links that you can use to get in contact with us. And we're active within the W3C Credentials Community Group and the Decentralized Identity Foundation. And those, I'm regularly on standards meetings in those places. But I'm happy to answer, especially on GitHub. Like, my preference as a developer is just to have the comments and questions go into something that's searchable that might help other people in the future. So if you can ask questions on GitHub issues, I'm happy to answer them there. Brian Bellendorf asks, the term universal wallet suggests a product, wherein this is a specification sort of difference. This is a specification sort of diff between Firefox and HTTP. Is there any interest in a Firefox of wallets? This is a criticism that is well taken for it. So it's Universal Wallet 2020, which everyone just is, we're always dropping the 2020 part, but it's meant to be a specification that is relevant to what's happening this year. I do hear that, like, you can't, it's the kind of thing that's like, you could put the term specification in the title of the specification, but then it's like you're kind of repeating yourself. I don't really know the best way to handle this. If there was a,
wallet interop spec is perhaps different than a universal wallet. Focusing on the interop side, but I guess I am more interested in that second part. I wasn't just being kind of joking around. I mean, is there a convergence strategy? You know, it was anyone who remembers the bad old days of IE6 knows that all of the standards work in the web was pretty much moot for about 5 years, between the time, basically before Firefox came along. That was pretty frustrating, a pretty frustrating time to be in the web standard space. It's getting frustrating again when it doesn't really matter what the standards players say, it's what Chrome implements, right? So, is there a strategy? Maybe Hyperledger could be helpful on that. in either convergence or converging lower layers of these common wallets out there. And we're out of time, so there's hard to answer a hard question like that. But if that's of interest, let us know. Maybe we can help.
Yes, definitely of interest. We want to make sure that it works for all parties and that there's standards as a way of defending interoperability. And whatever we can do to achieve that, we want to do it.
Great. We want to help.
Thank you. Thank you.
Ori, thank you, Brian, thank you, Jim, thank you, Daniel, thank you, Roland, Anshu, all the people who asked and answered questions, and Paul. Anyway, the point is we can continue this conversation on the mailing list. On, you know, there are a bunch of wiki pages that we interact on there too, but, you know, wherever the conversation takes us, hopefully to a universal wallet 2020.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all, and really value your questions and feedback, and feel free to raise